And welcome back to 216 Baseball, Cleveland Baseball Podcast. His name's Alex. My name's Paul. And if your favorite baseball team's sitting in first place right now, you're in the right spot. Let's get into it. Hey, Alex, what's going on, man? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I am, same old, but I'm great. This team is popping off, so we're bringing the energy today.
But we got some hot topic stuff, but we have some relatively breaking news that got put out before the first game today.
Okay.
The Guardians recalled Mustard back from single A.
Oh, they did? It's been a busy day. I didn't even catch that. That's funny. Yeah, I didn't even catch that. That's huge. Breaking news.
Yep. The Twitter account, the Rally Hot Dogs or whatever their Twitter account, Mustard posted a selfie and said, "Hi, haters." So he's back.
He's back.
He's a fucking menace, and I love it.
He is a menace. He did that funny joke on, like, Friday. What was it? Antonio Brown did that ridiculous posting that everybody was mocking of, like, my biggest regret is not getting to watch myself. And I saved a picture of it, and then I don't know where it went. It was freaking out, but, where we dump all our notes and stuff and our homework, and it disappeared, and then I couldn't find it, and I was like, well, we spent quite a bit talking about it last episode, but the Mustard mocked that, and it was fucking hilarious. It was like, my biggest regret is not being able to watch myself race and all this, and I was like, talk your shit, King, that you're not saying.
I know, I fucking love it.
So can I be 100% honest real fast? So right before we hit record, I ran out of the room, and I think you're thinking, like, what the hell? We just said start, because I heard my dog barking. I then almost proceeded to fall down the stairs, like, legitimately almost fell down the stairs, barely caught myself, and slipped my finger on the rail. So, but we went 6-1 last week. So
6-1, baby.
Nobody can get me down. I'm all right. Nope. I wouldn't even say slit. I just took, like, a little chunk. It just kind of cut.
Just enough for it to bleed in, like, that obnoxious amount.
Yeah, it's just like a little chunk. It thought it was worse at first. When I felt it, I was like, oh, I, like, slit my, like, I was like, oh, boy. And I was, like, staring at my finger. I'm, like, just waiting for it to go, like, blood red. And then it didn't. And then, like, 10 seconds later, I could see where the chunk came out. But we're going to live. We're going to live. Don't worry. I'm alive. Yeah. You don't need to find a new best friend or co-host. But, yeah, man, we're cooking. I mean, what a team. I guess I should ask you how you're doing, because we're all over the gambit here.
I'm doing good. Been cooking some stuff up.
Yeah, you've been busy. You've been in your bag.
Yeah, I've been.
Prestige worldwide.
Should I just go ahead and say it?
Yeah, I think it's fair.
So,
we're not sure when it's going to launch. Just disclaimer. Soon, but.
Yeah. Well, I've already launched it.
Okay.
Just like how you send out a bunch of controversial tweets without telling me.
I've never.
But
what's the number one controversial tweet that you think? Because it's on your mind.
Not controversial. Okay. Tweets that I don't agree with. Like, tweets that.
Let's do this.
Are your views that we don't see eye to eye on, which isn't a bad thing, but you tweeted out under our podcast account where I'm like, oh yeah, I don't agree with that.
True. And that's why God gave you a personal Twitter account.
Yeah.
Well, what is it? There's clearly something on your mind.
So I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I hate when people
anytime
do
you slander.
Oh, you always do this. You always do this. Something, something. And then
I did not say always.
Can you give me? No. I'm saying when people do stuff with people will be like, you always do this, or you do this. And you're like, well, can you give me an example, please, so I can fix it? And then they're like, well, I don't actually have one. Now, I'm giving you a hard time. I know there's stuff that I don't agree with. But
all that is Alex bitching because Not only did we make a Discord server for you guys to join so we can chat up real time in games with you guys and like pre-game, post-game, and have a bunch of chats and stuff. We also started a Patreon. And on the Patreon, we're going to have three different levels. We're going to iron out some of the prices and stuff.
Yeah. We're ironing that out.
So we have three tiers. We have a pup tier, a dog tier, and then a dog tier, which you have a DOG and a DAWG tier. The pup tier is going to give you access to couple...
We're still figuring it out. We're still figuring it out.
I already made the decisions.
We're still figuring this out, but there's going to be some good shit in there.
Yeah. One of the things is... on one of the tiers, you're going to get a bonus episode where it's just going to be us shooting the shit and kind of just like talking, having fun, and not so much Guardian stuff, but just Alex and Paul, kind of like the fireside chat stuff we've done. And
maybe some fun stuff, kind of like the off-season stuff that we did.
Yeah.
You know, where we kill time, but...
We're still going to come up with some of the ideas, but yeah. We got the Discord server,
ad-free episodes,
and then launched a website that we'll put a link to on Twitter and stuff for you guys, where like a central spot for you guys to get everywhere, to get to the Instagram, the Twitter, a little
Discord. It looks like it'll automatically give you that invite. When you click on
send
Discord.
You an invite to the Discord server for all the public channels that we made in there, and then
most recent episode also it'll
show you to all the episodes and a link to the merch store. So we'll go ahead and post that link down in the description and also on Twitter.
Yeah, so exciting! Biggest thing is just going to be the Patreon, and I mean the website's huge. You did a killer job with that, but as far as the Discord is going to be kind of your baby, and trying to migrate people. If you want more real time game chat with us, I'll do what I can. But yeah, that'll be a good time. We can interact in there and just be, you know, Twitter's, you know, you make comments, but you don't like, I mean, you can reply, but it's not as, you know, ongoing. Like if you're texting somebody, and obviously Discord will be a better platform for that, of real game chat. That's not just like someone throwing a statement and everybody replying to it. And so it'll be a good space, and we're excited about it.
I'll probably put it out on Twitter, try to get some more people in there for this evening game, but might try to hop into the voice chat or into the game time chat for the evening game today. Try to get some people in there and chat it up.
Yeah, I mean, we're excited about it. And you've got all the infrastructure rolling, and yeah, we kind of, that's kind of your baby and your vision. So it'll be a good time. We'll make sure to blast it on Twitter and stuff, but keep an eye out, and you can go to the website and get the invite link right away, and then come say hi. And we'll try and get something rolling to kind of be a cool spot for people that want to really regularly interact, not just on Twitter, you know, a kind of a different platform for that. So, yeah, it's exciting. Lots of good stuff. So, yeah, some hot topics. They're kind of on the lighter end, but three kind of like small things instead of, you know, they all come in different sizes. There's ones you're like, all right, buckle up. This is 30 minutes. These are all kind of like probably 10 minutes or less, but, you know, I feel like there's been a lot going around, or maybe it was just what I saw yesterday, of resurfacing the MVP debate and kind of what is an MVP. And that's in relation to Judge versus Ohtani in the American League. And it's the age old most valuable player versus best player versus if you play on a dumpster team, but you're still the best player in the world, do you deserve it? Because then you're not the most valuable per se. Or if you make your team reach the playoffs, or you are a difference maker if you take them out of the lineup, you know, taking it more surface, not surface level, but like as it's described of you are the most valuable, and you just look at value, not pure output. And so I guess, and I'm going to flip flop on this a little bit. My logic isn't going to be straight through. I'll just warn everybody, but this is one of those gut things, right? Where you just kind of have an opinion on. So I would ask you, Paul, do you have a strong opinion on this? And do you have, I guess, just an opinion on. If I ask you what a most valuable player is.
I think that the MVP needs – there's two trains of thoughts that I have, right? Now, does it mean most valuable player to the game of baseball, most valuable player to their team, or is it just the best player in baseball?
Correct. Exactly what I said.
I don't know.
Except for the team. Oh, I thought you were asking. I was like, that's literally the question I just posed.
No, like those are the trains that, like, I don't know.
Yeah. So for me, my gut is I honestly lean best player in baseball. But I don't immediately go, it's stupid if you think the most value. That's not the way I view it either. So you're saying
Mike Trout should win MVP every year?
When he earns it, yeah.
You're saying Mike Trout's the best player in baseball.
Yes, I'm saying the best player in any given year. Like, Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, but like, he's not the best player in baseball this year. Obviously, he's been hurt and stuff. So to me, and this is where it gets weird, like, Ohtani brings a value that's hard to...
That no other player brings.
Yeah, like that. So when you think about value,
he's one of one.
He's cooking on both sides. And like, there is, how do you value that, right? The closest thing that you could come up with is probably F-War. And even then, that doesn't take into account a guy that's going to be your DH and also turn around and pitch every 5 or 6 days. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah.
In that sense, Ohtani could and should win the MVP every year. But this is where I'm going to say, like, I don't know how I feel. Aaron Judge is the fucking MVP. You can't convince me otherwise. Like, that's how I feel. So that's where it's like, I'm a little wishy-washy, but like, that's why I kind of want to talk through it and see if how you felt. Because all that's true about Ohtani, Judge is the MVP. There's no argument in my mind. Like,
that makes sense. I think that, if they were to give Ohtani the MVP this year, I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it. I mean, I agree with you. Aaron Judge is playing out of his mind this year, and he deserves it. But I also think that there shouldn't be two MVPs. I think there should only be one league MVP, like how every other sport does it.
Okay.
It's not like in football, there's a AFC and NFC MVP. There's a NFL MVP. There shouldn't be a American League and National League MVP.
Holy shit. Aaron Judge has put up 7.5 war already. What the fuck? Holy shit. I mean, he's the perfect offensive player, basically. Not perfect, but I just mean, like, you can ask nothing more of what Aaron Judge has done. I mean, it's just absurd.
Yeah. I think what I'm saying is, like, that's with all the awards in baseball. I don't think there should be an American League and National League MVP. I don't think there should be an American League and a National League Cy Young. Mm-hmm. I think there should just be one award for baseball.
Okay. I feel that. It's tough, man.
Do you have opinions on that?
I like both leagues, honestly. I just think it's kind of the way baseball's played and stuff. But yeah, that's a new opinion, which is why we talked through things.
What's the difference between the American League and National League now?
Nothing. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and act
when
like
when there was no DH in the National League, it made more sense.
That's also a good
point.
The
way you value players in the National League is different. But now each league is identical. There's no difference between the American League and National League.
You're 100% right.
So why are we dividing them when it comes to awards?
Again, you're spitting. I don't know. It's just the way it's been done, which is a terrible excuse.
Yeah.
But that's I didn't think about that. With the leagues now being essentially the same, why not? So, if I had to ask you right now, Aaron Judge or Ohtani, who do you give the MVP to?
Aaron Judge. Answer.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. So it's like, in my head, I think the best player in baseball should win it. But
I wouldn't say Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball.
Just this year by just pure stats.
I would say Shohei Ohtani is still a better player. Like, overall baseball player, Shohei Ohtani is a better overall baseball player.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. I thought Austin Hedges just hit a home run.
I did too. I just saw that. But I was saying, stay in, because I thought it was Tigers batting. Yeah. And I was like, So now I feel really stupid. But no, I get it.
I think Shohei Ohtani is overall a better baseball player than Aaron Judge.
Yeah, he's not as good offensively as Aaron Judge, but he also pitches.
That's not what we said. We said overall better baseball player.
No, I know. I was just breaking it down. I'm just saying, like,
But I overall think Aaron Judge output deserves it.
Overall output in pure single season, just output. It's so hard to quantify Ohtani, like we said, but I still, it's a gut thing, which I hate doing because I'm not, it's just Judge. Like, it's just like what the fuck are you going to hit 65?
If you're talking output, he plays average defense, and above defense in right field, and is having an offensive season out of his mind. Mm-hmm. But Shohei Ohtani's pitches every 5 days and pitches well.
Yeah, he does for sure.
And still he's puts up offensive numbers to be in this conversation.
Yeah, he does. I mean, if you look at F4, he's still behind Judge, but that's not a great way to quantify the value of having one player be two people, basically. It's wild.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't want to get overly stuck on this. I just think it's interesting. It's something we could talk about forever. And I think we'll talk about it.
There's no right answer, honestly.
Well, there'll be a ton of time in the off season, and Judge will probably go one, or Ohtani will get one, and the other will get two, and it'll be split down the middle, and we'll probably spend 40 minutes, you know, going back and forth. But I just, it's one of those things that I really don't have a clear cut. It's kind of a gut thing. So,
God, Javier Baez sucks.
Yeah, Miles Straw, weak ground out to shortstop. Water is wet. It's either a fly out to right or a shortstop. Anyway, we're doing a podcast, not watching a game, even though we're trying to do both. Next thing up, I want to talk about Jose. Man, he's just pressing hard. He's not taking his walks. It's so apparent. Obviously, he's not walking much, so that kind of tells you. But
wants to hit
the games. He's just not taking the walks that are given him, and it just makes me want to strangle him. But I love that about him, too. But at the same time, when you're not 100% right, whether it's a thumb, whether it's, you know, just your timing being off.
That's the thing.
Yeah. But it's just tough.
No baseball player goes up going like, you know what, I'm going to do this at bat. I'm going to walk.
Juan Soto.
You know what I mean?
But yeah.
But like, no one goes up to Juan. I guarantee you Juan Soto doesn't step into the back or into the box going, I'm going to walk this at bat. Every baseball player that steps into a batter's box wants to hit the ball.
Yeah.
So if they see a pitch, the thing with Jose is he can make contact with pretty much any pitch ever thrown to him ever.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, I can hit that. And he swings at everything. And a lot of it he hits. And he hits balls that other people can't. So it looks like he's like, yeah, he's not taking his walks, but also that's what makes Jose great at the same time, is because he can hit any pitch thrown to him.
So that's fair. But at the same time, his walk rate since July 1st is 6% against his season average of 9.7 and his career average of 10. But last year he did like a little over 11, and the year before he did like 12.5. So I get what you're saying, but I want to reel it back that's a dangerous. Like, you got to take your fucking walk sometimes. I'm not going to fault him for wanting to hit. Shoot or shoot. And he is a dog. But you also got to play the role a little bit. Trust the guys behind you. And when you're putting up a 105 WRC plus since July 1st, and you're putting up a 98 that's below league average WRC plus since the All-Star break, again, he's Jose. He can hit his way out of it. But sometimes, and I know you've seen this in games, like, you can't argue this. It's just like, the walk's right there, dude. What are you fucking doing? It doesn't mean don't hit. It just means
take your
walks. They're two different things.
The ball that he hit in Toronto that was like a foot out of the strike zone that was low that he hit out, right? If he doesn't swing at that and walks, we don't score a run.
Yeah, that's fair, but that's also anecdotal. There's all the other times where he's swinging stuff out of the zone. He's pressing hard.
But if he's like, hey, I'm just going to take a walk, he doesn't hit a home run there. It's a mindset thing. You can't just change your whenever anyone goes into any at bat, that baseball players are so superstitious and routine based, and every time a pitch is thrown, it's right foot, left foot, hop. You know what I mean? Getting ready to take a ground ball. anytime I step into the box, I'm thinking, okay, ball hit, ball here, ball thrown here. I'm ball thrown outside. I'm taking it the other way. Inside, I'm going to pull it down the line. Like, they're so routine based to where you can't say, like, you can't go into every at bat. You can't put one at bat into a vacuum and be like, this at bat, you know what? Unless it's like ninth inning of the World Series, you know what I mean? And be like, this at bat, you know what I want you to do? Don't swing at that ball that you can hit out and take the walk, but the next at bat, swing at it. That's just not how baseball players' minds work. They're going up there and they're going to attack.
No, I agree. And it's not a predetermined, I'm going to get up there and try and walk, or I'm going to get up there and hit. You have to be in hitter's mode. If you're not, you're going to slump and you're not going to be a major league player for long. Like, you got to be ready to go all the time. But you also have to take what's given to you, which he's absolutely not doing. It's shown in the walk rate. It's shown in his WRC+. It's shown the fact he pops out 9 out of 10 pitches are just weak pop-ups or flyouts, and it's so frustrating. He's going to get it back. Shooters shoot, swing. But also, he's not doing walking nearly as – not. I shouldn't say nearly as much. I'm going to say the same shit over and over. But he's not taking walks that are on the platter for him. Like, if you have something to hit, hit it. But when they're just pitching around you, they're not throwing any strikes. What are you doing? Like, you gotta reel it in, man, especially when you're not, like, hitting that well. Behind you, people are finally protecting you a little bit. And it's just like, you got to work the walks. It's like the gap right now for
him. So you want to put a leash on him?
Not a leash. I just want him to take the walks. That's exactly
what you're doing. Like, you're like, hey, don't be as aggressive.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with that. Until you can figure it out. That's putting
a leash on him.
Until you can, okay, then I want to put a leash on him. But I think you're taking more out of something than what I mean. You just need to work the walks that are given you. If a guy is all over the place and doesn't really seem to want anything with, you know, doesn't want anything to do with you, let that happen. Like, you got to just reel it back a little bit. And then there's going to be times, 90% of the time, get in the box and just cook. And if you pop out, that's baseball. You fly out, you strike out, that's baseball. But when people are clearly pitching around you, don't want anything, work your walks. You have to take them. His OBP since July 1st is 301, below league average. His OBP since the All-Star break is 297, below average. Those numbers, even though he's, you know, not playing as well in other areas, would be more around that 320, 330 if he was taking these walks that were given to him where he's striking out or just popping out. And a lot of times, he's still striking out well below league average, even though in my mind it feels like he's striking out a lot more. Because he's just Jose and he's a god, but he's gotta just trust the people behind him. He's been painfully average. It's so hard to say that.
I'm gonna say this right now. Today, as we're recording this, he is second in the American League in RBIs and extra base hits. I will take him not taking walks as much to get that output.
Yeah, but he got, first of all, probably 80% of that output. Not the doubles. He continues, even when he's hurt, Jose is still amazing. But
he got a lot of it before the All-Star break in the first couple months like of the season. Yeah, he had
like 70 RBI. It was nuts. And then since
so the we're just going to say, hey, we're only going to praise him for before the All-Star break, even though the stats are to date now.
No, he's still putting a great year together. I'm saying right now we have a third of the season left to go. And part of the issue is you got to take the walks that are given to you. You can keep swinging. And he's told Andre Knott the other day Andre Knott on the broadcast the other day was saying that Jose told him he's really starting to feel it in the cage a little bit and feels like really good and locked in. That's great. He's going to swing, obviously, and keep swinging. Do what you do. But you can't press so hard and try and get right. And,
why not?
Like, get it because you're not taking your walks and you're below league average offensively. That's why. Like, we're coming down the stretch here. You got to do it. Like, he's still Jose. I love him. But, like, what you did for the first 2 months is awesome on a cumulative basis. And not,
But what if him swinging at that stuff is how he's going to get better? Like, in his mind, he's like, you know what I have to do? I have to swing out of this. I have to keep swinging out of this.
Then I don't know. We just don't see eye to eye on this.
What I'm saying is, like, have you ever played professional baseball?
I haven't. And I... disclaimer, I have not. I'm not a professional baseball player. You know, but like, I see people throwing balls all in the dirt, almost fucking hitting him, and he's swinging at it instead of taking walks and letting other people in the lineup do their job. You can swing, and yeah, his contact rate is nuts, so go for it. But there's times where you are pressing so hard and it's so apparent, just take the walks that are given to you. It doesn't mean that you can't swing. It's just take your walk sometimes. That is what great players do, and it's what he was doing in the beginning of the season when every time he swung his bat, it was going over the fence, and he was still taking his walks. Those things can coincide, and they do for great players. So you can do both, even or one or the other.
And but right now he's not, and I don't know what his mindset is right now, but he's not. But he very well could be just like, you know what I need to do to get back to what I should have been. I need to just keep swinging. I need to swing out of this.
And he's swinging, and that's fine and dandy, but work your walks. I mean, what you're saying isn't like invalid. I don't want you to think that. We just don't see eye to eye, and I think we agree on more of this than we don't, but if he goes on a tear, it's over. I've already sold my soul. I'm ready to have my feelings hurt. We're going to win the division. I don't care if it ages poorly. I'm all in. Totally ready to be hurt again. But it is absolutely over for you bitches if he turns it back on and like goes like nut job MVP Jose. That's going to be we'll fuck around and win the division by like 7 games. And then the last thing is, and I know you'll love this, is Guardians catchers. You know, we've talked about it, but I wanted to put some stats to it. They've been playing a lot better since, you know, the All-Star break / trade deadline. So it's time to kind of quantify that. So since the All-Star break, Hedges has 100 WRC plus league average and a 652 OPS and 59 plate appearances. Not a gigantic sample size, but also getting it done. He's effective.
He's making a lot more hard contact. He's taking walks, and his approach has just been a lot better at the plate.
Night and day. Just watching it, you're like, oh yeah, you're locked in. And it's not even like, oh, he's just hitting like a crazy amount or this and that. Although he's getting more hits, it's still a 652 OPS. But again, when you just for ballpark factor and all that, 100 WRC plus says he's actually league average. And we'll take that all day, even just an 80, we'll take it. But yeah, the OBP's way up, and the whole quality of everything he's doing is looks locked in. And then since the All-Star break, Maley has had a 177 WRC plus and a 952 OPS in 30 plate appearances. So half the sample size. But he also, I didn't know this because I felt like he was really hot to start and then just sucked donkey balls for the longest time until recently. But in 134 plate appearances this year, so his entire year, he has a 90 WRC plus, which if you held a gun to my head, I would have guessed that wrong and wouldn't be here today to record. So,
yeah, I mean, like we've talked about, and he has a smaller sample size than Hedges does all year, so obviously the numbers are going to be not skewed. I mean, I guess that's the right word. It's harder. It's
less context. I mean, it's half the sample size at least, probably even less than that.
But he's what you want in a backup catcher. He's serviceable behind the plate. He still calls a good game. He's knowledgeable. He's been around the league forever. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I mean, the fact that he's hitting well right now is just icing. Yeah. We'll take it.
But the thing is, like, you know how I am about Austin Hedges. It's
if he put up a 75 or 80 WRC plus, I mean, I can say it till I'm blue in the face. He's worth it. Like, you know, until Bo Naylor gets here, where you hope that he could do a lot of what Hedges does behind the plate. There's no way he'll be as good as him behind the plate. I just don't see how that's possible. Maybe he will be. I don't know. Yeah. But you expect Bo Naylor to be like 110, 120, probably, you know, like a banger, plus really good defensive catcher who's turned it around offensively night and day.
I've said this so many times. Let Bo Naylor learn from Austin Hedges. Let him learn how to call a game, how to manage that bullpen, manage that pitching staff. Because it's very clear that Austin Hedges does a really good job with it.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know what I mean? And Bo Naylor's offense is there. We see it down in AAA. Like, we know it's coming. Like, it's not a guarantee that it's going to translate to the MLB, like to the big leagues, you know what I mean? But
out of body experience this year after he was a defensive first catcher was my understanding. And then last year just had a year to forget offensively, got it going towards the end of the season. But then this year from the beginning was like,
yeah,
Bo Bonds Naylor. Like, what are you, are you okay?
Like, so what? It very well could be like, right now it's looking like offensively he's going to be it, but let him learn the ins and outs of catching a major league baseball team, running that pitching staff. You know what I mean? From Austin Hedges, who does a very, very good job at it.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the most, I wouldn't say slept on, but there's no way to really quantify it. You can, you can look at catchers. There's so many variables. So you can't just be like, this guy's staff has a 3 ERA. This guy's staff has a 3.5. There's so many variables. Quality of pitchers. There's no good way, but I think that is honestly one of Hedges' strongest skills is game calling. If not, I mean, he's an incredible framer and all that. Maybe it's probably more common knowledge than not, but I mean, man, that's where a lot of the, I'd say game calling, brick wall that nothing gets past, framing, and he is elite in all three of those things. But
yeah,
leading a pitching staff is a huge part of that. And Hedges,
and all that stuff can get passed down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can teach someone a mindset. You can teach someone how to watch film. You can teach someone how to analyze film and break down a game plan to attacking hitters. You can teach somebody that. You can pass that stuff down. Now, intangibles like speed, strength, stuff like that, you can't teach.
Yeah.
But the approach to framing, that can get taught.
Yes and no. But I'm not arguing. I want him to pass the stuff down. I think that's a God-given talent thing to an extent of like, you can teach someone to get better.
There's
people, but
like, so to be an elite framer, it just comes naturally. But it's also a mechanic to where you attack the ball from the bottom so it looks more natural. Instead of stabbing at the ball, you come up and you let it come to you and you move naturally with it. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of stuff that can get taught when it comes to framing.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot to be passed down. I was just saying, like, I don't think you could work with someone every day. And I think Hedges just has a God-given talent to at his level to get as good at it as he is.
But, like, honestly, I can't think of anyone better to pass this stuff down to Bo Naylor when Bo Naylor comes up. Like, yeah, going out and getting Sean Murphy would have been cool for right now. But thinking of what Bo Naylor can do for this team 4 or 5 years down the line, you know what I mean? When we have the potential to be really competitive with the young kids we have right now,
mm-hmm.
when they have lots of experience, theoretically, right? And like, you build for the future. You don't build your future with trades. You build your future with your farm system.
Or use that to build your future. Yeah. But I get it. Yeah, I mean, you're always going to be highest on the guys that, you know, you bring up and that, you know, you've been a huge part of their development, of course.
Yeah, I would rather Bo Naylor learn the catching position in Major League Baseball from Austin Hedges rather than Sean Murphy. That's my opinion.
Which is fair. What's you want to be a little salty? Sean Murphy is like ahead of Hedges in every defensive stat for catchers this year. But yeah, I love Hedges, but he's beating him in framing by quite a bit. Andrés Giménez base hit up the middle every fucking time. Let's go.
But I don't know. When we watched that series against the A's, I was like, hey, there's just something about Sean Murphy that like I can tell you what it is.
I know exactly what it is. His on his back says Murphy, not Hedges. I know exactly what it fucking is. Anyway,
he had like, I think in the series he had like 2 passed balls and they just weren't good.
Yeah. I also specifically remember an incredible backhanded pick that he made that even I texted you. He's like, you're like, yeah, I saw that. It was incredible. But no, that one series, it wasn't. But it is what it is. Shout out to the catchers. We got to give them credit.
Yeah.
You know,
and they're not Austin Hedges. You're right. I'm biased. I'll admit it. I've admitted it since the beginning of the season. I admitted it last year.
You did.
I'm biased. I
what do you want me to do? I'm just a man.
But I really like Austin Hedges. It's just something about his personality, the way he acts in the clubhouse on interviews, when he's talking about the pitching staff. Andre Knott did an interview with him after Bieber's outing in Detroit. I think it was Detroit.
So early last week? And he was talking about,
what?
Early last week then?
Yeah. I don't remember if it was Bieber starting Detroit or Toronto. I want to say it was Detroit. Because Bieber started in Toronto yesterday, right?
Yeah, yesterday. So you either heard it yesterday or it was Detroit.
It was Detroit. And he was talking about how Bieber stuff's ticking up and how the whole pitching staff's ticking up. But he had this like quote about all of the rookies, when he's like, yeah, like it's almost to be expected now. Like these kids come up and they don't have like this, the pressure of being a rookie. Like he had this, the Guardians Twitter account tweeted it out. So I don't want to butcher the whole thing, but like watching how he talks about this team and how passionate it is about this team and how close all these guys are and how they all like play together and play for each other. It's just, it all gets expressed to another level when Austin Hedges talks about it. He's a very good speaker.
He is. And
you know what I mean? You can tell like he's just one of the leaders of that clubhouse, and it's very apparent.
It is. I got to stop you there. Otherwise, it could be another half hour of this.
Yeah.
At some point, I got to push you away from the table. You got to cash out your chips. But no, he is. The intangibles are off the charts with him. And he had this cool thing. It was really just to kind of talk about him, that I think it was this morning. Yeah, that the Guardians tweeted out that, you know, Hedges, there was a quote that he said that, you know, we need, when asked about the upcoming homestand, that he said, we need loud, which, why use more words when less words do trick? But
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, we need loud. I love the energy behind it.
You know what I think it is? It's that my brain and his brain work the same way.
Yes. But he's calling, so, he's hyping the people up. It gets the people going. We need loud.
So like I relate with him so much. I think that's why I like him so much.
That is like 90% of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's a dude. I love him. But speaking of the homestand coming up, this episode will come out on Monday, so we got a doubleheader today. And then we still got two more, Tuesday, Wednesday, against Detroit. And then off day on Thursday, and then right back at it Friday, Saturday, Sunday against the White Sox. So big series in that we got to beat the shit out of Detroit. And then obviously division rival White Sox later this week. It's huge. Hedges said it best. We need loud. Listen, unless it's your first episode, you already know. SeatGeek, best mobile ticketing app there is on all major platforms, iOS, App Store, Android, Google Play. It's as good as it gets. Download the app. Make it super easy. Go looking for seats. Bright green. It's going to tell you, hey, that's an awesome deal. You're going to want to jump all over that. Big red dot. Financially irresponsible. If you do it, you know, you deserve to have your house burned down. I don't know. I think that's what they say to do in the ad read. But, you know, stay away from that. Someone's trying to rip you off. We all work too hard for our money to blow it. So they make it easy. Big green dot. And no matter what, where the seat is, it'll show you a view from your seat so you can flex on your friends and be like, "Ayo, this is where we're going." I'm actually going to the game with Quincy and my brother on Friday because I'm going to be back in the land and I'm super excited. That'll be my first game at Progressive Field in 3 years, thanks to COVID and living out here in Indianapolis, so haven't had the chance. But I use SeatGeek, use code 216BASEBALL for $20 off. It's that easy, and I did it. And I was actually literally to go on there and sent my brother. He's like, well, because Quincy and I wanted to sit directly behind home plate in like the nosebleeds. But like in the first couple rows, I found tickets. Nick's like, I don't know, I might want to sit in the bleachers. I'm like, just trust me. This is a true story. And I sent him the picture and I was like, this is what they look like. And he's like, oh, shit, those bang. I was like, yeah, don't worry. Yeah. Quincy and I won't lead you astray. Those are my favorite non premium, like where I'm going to drop some money to sit somewhere, seats in the whole stadium, sleeper seats. So
the seats that me and my dad sat in when we went,
first base line, those were sweet, like, with the little the angle corner and stuff. And you use SeatGeek. And hey, if you're not into baseball but you're listening to this podcast, thank you so much. But also, why? But listen, basketball's coming back, football's coming. Concerts,
preseason's festivals going on right now.
Yeah, preseason
for football,
concerts, festivals. You want to see a play?
Plays.
You a thespian?
Yeah,
I love that for you. Download the app, 216 Baseball Pod, $20 off SeatGeek. So game one was on last Tuesday because we had Monday off. Prior to the game, we learned, and we knew this was kind of coming, that we would see who and who wasn't vaccinated. Mandy Bell had tweeted out that James Karinchak would be the only Guardians player not to travel this weekend to Toronto, meaning last weekend, where you obviously have to have your vaccines to get into Canada. So a little surprised, not about Karinchak, to be clear. He's made it very clear over time. But I want to say I respect what he said. In the past, he's made some really foul comments. It's a personal choice. I think there's a right one, but whatever, right? If that's not yours, but just leave it at that. He got into some conspiracy shit last year that was really foul, and even bordered on racist, which is, that's amazing that someone could do. Moving on from that, this year he said it's a personal choice and shrugged your shoulders. You got to respect that. So,
yeah.
But glad to see a little maturity and or someone telling him to knock it the fuck off and just nod your head and say it's a personal choice and move on, because that's okay. But yeah, he was the only one, figured with 25 other guys, you know. But yeah, so we had most of the squad, but that doesn't have to do with game one in Detroit, but just we kind of knew ahead of time that week about that. So game one was Bieber versus Alexander. Guardians come into Tuesday night's game all rested up after their first day off on Monday since the All-Star break. That kind of reads weird. Sorry. They had obviously the day before off, which was their first off day since the All-Star break. Cleveland is riding a high after managing to split the Houston series after losing the first two games. And that included a dramatic 1-0 win on Sunday afternoon. So feeling good. We got a 6-game road trip starting with Detroit, and we need to beat up on them for cheap wins because we're going to go to Toronto. Tough place to play. Great team. And we're trying to make it 3 in a row thanks to winning Saturday and Sunday. So we send our ace, Shane Bieber, to the bump to try and get it done. And wouldn't you know, he does ace things against this terrible Tigers offense. And we take game one. Quick line, Cleveland, 5 runs on 11 hits, no errors. Detroit, 2 runs on 6 hits and no errors. Offensive highlights. Hey, in the first 4 innings, we only had 2 base runners. So not how you draw it up. Jose single and an Ahmed double. And that was it. And it looked like we were going to get cooked again by some dude you've never heard of on the Tigers, which has been our MO all season and been very painful. But in the top of the 5th, Owen Miller hits a 1-out single, followed by Andrés Giménez single that moves Owen to third. So like seeing us get aggressive on the base paths, that allows Austin Hedges to hit a sac fly. So that's why those extra bases matter. That scores Owen and gives us a 1-0 lead. Top of the 6th, Stephen Kwan leadoff double, followed by an Ahmed Rosario RBI double. That scores Kwan and extends our lead to 2-0, so love to see it. Top of the 8th, Stephen Kwan draws a 1-out walk, followed by an Ahmed single. And then with 2 outs, Oscar Gonzalez hits a 2-run double, scores Kwan and Ahmed, opens things up late, and we take a 4-0 lead. And then still the top of the 8th, Josh Naylor gets in on the fun with an RBI single. That brings home Oscar Gonzalez and makes it 5-0 Guardians. So after 4 innings where it was like, oh, it's going to be one of those games, in the next 4 innings, we put up 5 runs, which, awesome. Just overall notes, every starter except for Hedges and Straw had a hit, with Ahmed leading the way. He had 3, and 2 of them were doubles and an RBI in there. And then Oscar Gonzalez also had 2 hits, which included that 2-run double. And then Andrés Giménez went 2-for-4 with a double. So, hey, they stifled us at first, but we got it going late, and these are games we need to win. So, not going to lie, they had us in the first half.
And Hedges had the sack fly.
True. So Ofer, so, but sack fly, he's getting it done, doing his job, productive at bats.
Yeah, he had production.
Key stats, and we're going to see a lot of this episode. 2 strikeouts to 1 walk. Yep.
Bad on ball.
11 hits, 5 were for extra base hits. I don't know how you have 11 hits, 5 of them are for extra base hits, and you only put up 5 runs. Like, I'm not going to complain, but it just feels like we should have put up like an 8-piece on this game. And then we went 4 for 10 with runners in scoring position, which is obviously a 400 average. So you kind of look at this and you go, 2 strikeouts, 1 walk, 11 hits, 5 of almost half are extra base hits, and you bat 400 with runners in scoring position. If I had to ask you how many runs you think that produced, your mind probably goes to 7 or 8. Yeah. So it's kind of weird that we only put up 5, but hey, it was enough, so no complaints. Oh, he's a sleepy boy. He's yawning.
Excuse me, I yawned. Defensively in this one, in the bottom of the 5th, Andrés Giménez, which is going to be pretty much on repeat, makes a great diving play on a ground ball hit to shallow right field while he was playing in a shift. So he was playing in that weird rover spot. Makes a great diving play on a ball and then hops up and then throws a strike to Naylor covering at first.
What he did yesterday, I literally was like, ah, like,
yeah,
I know. So pitching,
are you talking about yesterday or the day before?
No, yesterday, what he did. It was nuts. The spin, the turnaround play. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So pitching analysis, Bieber absolutely shoved in this one. Continues his streak of strong starts lately. Even if it's the Tigers, you go 7 innings, a scoreless ball. You only give up 4 hits. You walk 1 and strike out 8. It's impressive. I don't really care who you're playing. These are major league players. And not much else to say. He was mowing them down. Numbers speak for themselves. Love to see his season ERA after this one down to 3.21. Obviously, Mickey Mouse Cy Young, and he's a fraud and, you know, all that stuff still, of course. Find God. But no, like to see him come into his own. And then Karinchak comes on for the 8th, pitches a perfect inning of relief, strikes out 2 because he's a nut job and he is just in his bag. And then Eli's given the 9th to try and work things out because he's got a 5-run lead to protect. And he still manages to make this one spicy. He gives up back-to-back singles, then walks someone to load the bases. Then he gets a line out and a strikeout. So, okay, sweaty, but see if he can work out of it. Then he walks Eric Haas with the bases loaded. So there's a run. So now it's 5-1. And obviously bases are loaded, and so technically Grand Slam would tie it, but still pretty spicy. So we have to get Class A warmed up then to come in for the save for 1 out, which is not what we wanted to do. I mean, a 5-run game, you should not have to get your closer up. And Class A comes in, throws a wild pitch, which allows another run to score, but that obviously goes to Eli. And then Class A gets a ground up to end the game because he decides he's bored, and he gets his 25th save of the year. So I did want to say something. Austin Hedges truther, at MLB Field, our buddy with the dog in him meme, did some really good analysis that I saw that was really interesting. And he said, hey, everybody keeps talking about Eli needs a third pitch and this and that. But he did this research, and I guess if you dig deep enough in Baseball Savant, I didn't have the time this week to look at it, but Baseball Savant will actually track and measure your release point, like what height you are releasing at. And I guess ever since his kind of downfall, he kind of tracked it. His arm slot in his release point is way lower. So Quincy has kind of thrown around maybe dead arm and obviously still believing in him. And that would definitely line up that, hey, all the other peripherals are pretty much there. But yeah, if your release point, you know, maybe you got dead arm, whatever it is, fatigue, pitching this much and this often and high leverage, and you know, he's young and this is really his first full year, right? That could lead to that. So I just wanted to shout out to Austin Hedges Truther for awesome analysis to kind of go in and get in the lab and try and see what's going on. It could be more dead arm. I still think he needs a really strong third pitch. People were saying, well, Mariano Rivera only had 1, you know, but that's also the greatest closer of all time. And, you know, relievers can get away with 2 pitches, but if you can develop a true third, and I know he's working on a slider, that's only going to make you better when you could keep people off of stuff. So, but I thought that was interesting. He did awesome analysis to figure that out. So shout out to him.
Special notes in this one, Mandy Bell tweeted out, that Cleveland starters have thrown 21 consecutive scoreless innings. It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I would say so. That's, you got Bieber 7 innings. You got on Sunday was Quantrill 6, right? That's 13. And then, well, T-Mac on Saturday gave up a run, didn't he? I don't know. Bieber, T-Mac, Quantrill?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was Bieber, T-Mac, Quantrill. But yeah, because T-Mac went 8 innings, excuse me, against the Astros on Sunday. So there's 8, 15, and then on Saturday, Quantrill went 6. So yeah, 21. That will win you some games. But anyway, game 2, prior to the game, Guardians Perspective tweeted out, there were other people, but this was the cleanest tweet, that we activated Aaron Civale off the injured list, and we optioned Jake Jewell to Columbus. And then we also learned that Zach Meisel tweeted out that Peyton Battenfield will join the Guardians of Toronto this weekend, replacing James Karinchak, which does not require someone, even though I'm pretty sure Battenfield's still on the 40. It doesn't require someone, I don't believe, to be put on the 40 if you are just replacing someone because of COVID status. So, fun fact. Although it didn't matter here, just transaction... transaction rules with Alex, although I'm no expert. There are some people that are crazy good on Twitter. So Civale versus Hutchison, Guardians come into one Wednesday evening's game. What?
I guarantee you no one cares.
No, I know. I know. Well, in my mind, I brought it up because I remember people saying it. And as I was reading quickly, I was thinking this does apply. But then I'm like, no, it doesn't, because he's on the 40, man. So then it was just me trying to... Just a little fun fact.
The entire time I was like, no one cares. Not a single person listening cares.
I would agree with that. So Civale versus Hutchison, Guardians come into Wednesday evening's game looking to make it 4 in a row, and happy to have an old friend back as Aaron Civale comes off the IL to start this game. Civale pitches brilliantly in the first 3 innings, but then hits a little bump in the 4th. But the early offense for us and a lockdown bullpen performance sealed the deal as we take game 2. Tight one here. Cleveland 3 runs on 8 hits, 1 error. Detroit 2 runs, 8 hits, and no errors. You see, we won that game because we scored more runs than them. So offensive highlights, top of the first, Stephen Kwan leads the game off with a triple to right field. What a hot boy. God damn.
He's on fire.
Yeah, he's just a pest in that. He is just the perfect leadoff hitter. Dude, he is so, he's got to piss people crazy. Off. Like, just fucking stop. And then with one out, Jose, RBI single to left field. That scores Kwan. We're up 1-0 early. It is fun and usually good to play from ahead. Top of the second, Andres Jimenez leadoff single, then steals second for his 13th bag of the year. He's on a tear, just stealing every bag in sight lately. And then Nolan Jones flies out to center. That allows Jimenez to tag up and go to third. Again, solid base running, keep making productive outs. Will Benson then gets his first major league hit, and it's an RBI single to right field. So he held off for a more dramatic first hit, and that scores Jimenez and gives us a 2-0 lead.
It's almost the point now where the joke is like not funny anymore, but anytime anyone gets their first hit, Jose and Ahmed get it and pretend like they're going to throw it into the stands. Literally, it's happened every time this year.
That's their thing, and that was in our special notes, so I just went ahead and deleted that because fuck me. Zach Meisel. Did you do that off the cuff, or did you know that was in there?
No, just from the dome piece.
Yep, Zach Meisel. It was just a tweet that he was
there it is.
As always, they do that, you know, where they mess with them. But you know what? It builds character. I don't care if it's ran into the ground. That's one of those things. Do it every time. Who cares?
I don't know.
And maybe, man, one of these days they'll do it.
No, they wouldn't.
I know. I'm just joking. But imagine if they put someone in the crowd that were like, they would never risk it.
That's
but
you way know too mean? Much risk.
I know. I'm just saying. But watch a rookie. Like, they'll never do it. They do this joke all the time. Like, fuck off. And then they do it and they're like...
What they should do is get like a fake ball.
Yeah, and make it like do a little like deke them a little bit, like make them think it's the ball. Like a little
sleight of hand.
Yeah. Ooh, better way to put it, sleight of hand. Yeah, a little magician, like, ooh.
Yeah.
But anyway, then still the top of the second, Austin Hedges, who else? Whoops. singles to right field. That moves Benson over to third. And then Miles Straw hits an RBI ground out, bringing home Benson. And now we're up 3-0, which ends up being enough to win this one. And not much to say about this one. We strung together some hits in the second to put a few across. And then good thing, because from the fourth inning on, we didn't have another base runner, which is wild. You heard that correctly. From the fourth inning on, we literally did not have another base runner against the Detroit Tigers. But you know what? Still got it done. So yeah, Kwan had a nice day, 2-for-4 with that leadoff triple. And then Jimenez went 2-for-4. But again, congrats to Will Benson. Kid, first major league hit, absolute chills. Can't imagine the feeling that would go through your body. Out of body experience.
Yeah.
Key stats, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk. Ugh. Don't care about the strikeouts as much. That's actually just a tick above our average, and we're the best team in baseball in striking out in a good way. But 1 walk, not great. 8 hits, only 1 for extra base hits. That's kind of tough. 2-for-8 with runners in scoring position, 250 average, just enough to get it done, which is kind of what this game was. And we left 5 on base, even though we had 9 base runners.
Defensively, in this one, in the bottom of the fifth, Andres Jimenez makes a very good heads-up play on a routine ground ball by throwing home to get Eric Haas out at the plate. Notice that it was Eric Haas on third, like, ah, that dude's slow as shit. And Eric Haas just didn't get a good jump. And just a good heads up play.
I will make you pay. He's like an injury lawyer.
And in the bottom of the ninth, Ahmed throws a ball away on a routine throw to first, which puts the tying run at second.
It happens sometimes. He's been playing out of his mind lately. But I will say this week, he came back down to earth a lot.
It was one of those things where it's just like, oh, why'd it have to be now?
Yeah. This week, he had a couple, and that happens. But this week, people that were getting way too high, like someone really threw the word elite out. And I was like, I don't want to live in this world anymore. Like, I'm glad he made some elite plays, not an elite shortstop. But then it kind of everything regresses back to the mean a little bit. But
yeah,
that's going to happen sometimes, too. So whatever. Pitching analysis. Great to have Savali back from the IL, and he looked pretty damn sharp in his return. He threw 3 perfect innings before getting into a jam in the fourth when he gave up a leadoff double to Riley Green. Then he hit Javi Baez with a pitch. And then RBI single to Harold Castro, and then an Eric Haas RBI double. So, you know, strung it together there on him. But then he got the final 2 outs and didn't come back out for the fifth. I'm guessing he was on a pitch limit because he went 62 pitches. 39 of them were for strikes. So that's 63%. Not bad. But I do think he only made 1 start, rehab start in AAA, I believe. So makes sense. You know, you'd only let him go about 60. But all in all, 4 innings, a 2-run ball, 3 hits, 4 strikeouts, not too shabby. And the 3 perfect innings to start. You know, that's baseball a little bit. Maybe he got tired. And I'm sure he'll build on it. And hopefully right now, spoiler alert, he's got 5 innings of 1-run ball. So, yeah, I would say he's hanging in there, even if it is
against the Tigers. He got touched up in the first a little bit.
Hey, only 1 run, so we'll take it. But bullpen has to put some.
I think he got bailed out by Miles Straw on a diving catch.
That's Miles Straw, baby.
Yeah.
Bullpen has to put some work in to bridge the next 5 innings. And they were up for the challenge. So Henches gives you 2/3 of an inning, gives up 2 hits, strikes out 1. So not the sharpest, but gets through it. Then Sandlin comes in, just 1 out, finishes the 5th after Henches gets into a little bit of trouble. Brian Shaw pitches the 6th. And ends up getting the win. He's now 5-2 and pitched a perfect inning of relief. Struck out 2 as well, which, okay. Then Stefan comes on, perfect 7th. Strikes out 2. I love that for him. Karen Check.
Can I ask you something when it comes to Brian Shaw?
Okay, go ahead. One second. Just finish. 1 second. Yeah. Then Karen Check comes out for the 8th, gives up 2 hits, but scoreless inning, still strikes out 3. So really excited for the North Olmsted Police Department. I think they're going to get a new whiteboard, which is really important. And then Classe comes out for the 9th, gives up 1 hit just to kind of feel something, you know, felt like he's getting, just wanted to know what it was like to give up a hit. He strikes out 2, 26th save of the year. And that only took him, why can't I find it? 15 pitches. So a little on the higher side for him.
Yeah.
Usually he's like single digits or bust. But yeah, shout out to the bullpen. Five innings of five hit, no walk, 10 strikeout ball. Yeah, that'll do. Let's go. But anyway, what were you going to ask me?
When are we just going to say, you know what? I mean, I would say 65 to 70% of the time, Brian Shaw is serviceable for one inning.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, rocking his 5-something ERA. It's just when he gets used.
Yeah.
Like, you had to use him in this game. I'm not going to argue with that. I just think it's funny that he's got 5 wins. Like, that just shows you how funny and fickle. At a certain point,
we have to be like, you know what? Like, yeah, there's better bullpen pitchers that we could have. But, like...
Careful.
He's a fucking workhorse.
Oh, he is. I'll never... He's one of those people, he's like Ahmed, where... The hustle, the
dude just pitches grind so many innings a year. And at like that has to be valuable for something.
It is. But then it's also like quality as well. And yeah. this needs to be his last year. Sometimes you
need quantity over quality, though.
They do, but you can get quantity and a lot of quality too at times. So this needs to be the last year for Tito's pet. But yeah, just a great outing for in the bullpen and yeah, just solid way to lock it down.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna take my own special note here because this is so interesting to me. So sure,
just go ahead and steal my thunder. Yep.
I'm sorry.
You're gonna talk the entire time. And when it's my turn, you're just gonna like, you know what, I'm gonna talk this time too. Okay. It's okay. You know what? You can just do the show by yourself.
This is Paul's special notes then, as he mutes himself. So, Joel Hammond tweeted at Zach Meisel and said, "When's the last time a team won a game with its final 20 batters retired in order?" And Zach replied, "April 31st, 1827." And I didn't fact check that, but I mean, Meisel is usually pretty serious, so I got to think that that is actually what happened. And that's wild because I don't know, it seems way farther back than baseball goes, but, apparently that's not the case. So just absolutely wild. See, Paul's acting all dramatic right now, but he definitely just went to take a piss and decided to use this as an excuse to do that. So on to game three, and he's going to come back because he could probably hear me say this in his headphones and he's going to yell at me. Game three is Plesac versus Hill. Guardians come into Thursday afternoon's game with their brooms in hand as they look for the series sweep and their 5th win in a row. Cleveland sends all-time fuckboy Zach Plesac to the bump to try and get it done. And man, does he need a solid start to get things turned around. Luckily, he finally turns things around with a very solid outing. Bullpen lets it slip late, but that just made things more fun when we won yet another game in extras this year. Guardians win game three, sweep the series, and extend their win streak to 5. Quick line, Cleveland 4 runs on 8 hits and 1 error. Detroit 3 runs on 7 hits and 3 errors.
Oh, imagine that. You're still talking.
Yeah. Did you hear what I was saying?
No.
Oh, did it cut out?
I took my headphones off.
Oh, I was like, just wait. He's going to come back and he's going to bitch the second he gets back. I said, but you had to piss and you use that as an excuse to be dramatic.
I didn't have to piss. My roommate got home. I had to tell him something.
Oh, okay. Same thing. Detroit had 3 errors.
Not at all. Oh, yeah. 3 errors. You deserve to fucking lose.
I feel like we should come up with something like 3 errors.
Yeah. Detroit's bad.
Think about relegating to the minor leagues. Offensive highlights, top of the second, Andrés Giménez, leadoff single, gets things started, and then he proceeds to steal second base. That's his 14th bag of the year. And then with one out, Tyler Freeman gets hit by pitch. Then Luke Maley grounds out to first base to the Tigers' first baseman. It's about halfway between first and second on the right side, obviously. So then the guy throws to second to get Freeman, but Javi Baez, known loser, makes a terrible throw to first that's probably 5 feet wide of the pitcher covering. So Giménez, who was at second on that, never stopped running, knew where the ball was, and scored on that play. So good base. Knew
Javier Baez is trash.
Yeah, he's an absolute loser, always has been. And so now we're winning 1-0 in this one. Top of the fourth with one out, Andrés Giménez gets hit by pitch because the Tigers want to see what these hands are all about, and they're about to fucking learn, okay? I'm done with it. OG then hits into a fielder's choice where everyone ends up being safe because Tigers third baseman Willy Castro makes a fielding error on the play. Because again, they're trash.
Get down, ball.
See, Strahl go first to home. Oh, yeah. He walked.
He went second.
Or second. I meant to say second to home. That's a tie ball game, baby. Bottom of the fifth. Let's go. He was kid Strahl on a flare to right. Go second to home. His water wet. It's the sky blue. He could have walked home. He literally, by the time they got the ball in, he was literally about almost to home, just jogging and just watching the ball. Yeah. Like, come on. Nice.
Well, two outs. He was running on contact. So,
oh, is it two? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Over the shift, too. Even though it was Jose, RBI single, nice swing. And they put that person in shallow right because he hits into that all the time. And he just whoop right over his head. Just love to see it. So, yeah, Tigers defense is trash. Jimenez scored and big insurance run, obviously. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I fucked around and messed that up. So everybody's safe. They're on first and second now. And then with two outs, Luke Maley slaps a single to right field. That scores Jimenez and tacks on an important insurance run, like I was saying. So now it's 2-0. Sorry about that. And then top of the fifth, Stephen Kwan. Leadoff solo shot to right field. That's his third of the year. Gives us a 3-0 lead. Let's go. Let's go.
So I think in the Detroit series, he goes like 4-for-11 with a single, double, triple, and home run.
Hit for the series cycle. That's what they're talking about when they say the cycle, right? Hey, extra base hits, baby. That gets that slugging up. He's not going to get a lot of them out, but tap into that, you know? I tweeted out, I was like, Stephen Kwan says, fuck walks. I want to hit bombs. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah, that's why Jose does it.
Yep. And then top of the 10th with two outs, automatic runner at second, clutch time. OG comes through because a motherfucker just hits. RBI single to right field, scores Jose from second, gives us a 4-3 lead in extras. And then Shaw nails down the save in the bottom of the 10th. I did not misspeak. That happened. And we complete the sweep because anything is possible. Owen and OG were the only hitters to have a multi-hit game. They each went 2-for-5. Obviously, OG had that big hit. Kwan and Jimenez each stole a bag in this one. Kwan stole his 10th. Jimenez stole his 14th. And tough day for Ahmed and Jose out of the 2 and 3 hole. They went 0-for-10 in this game. And that's a tough way to score runs. But we win it. That's how it goes. Key stats.
I just want to say that I'm happy that I got the nickname Prosper Gonzalez OG started.
Yep.
It makes it so much easier.
It is a lot easier than one, typing it out, and two, it's just OG. You know who we're talking about. Keep that thing on him. Key stats, 2 strikeouts to 2 walks. Yeah. Nuts. That's crazy. 8 hits, 2 extra base hits, and not too shabby. 2-for-13 with runners in scoring position. That's a 154 average. That's not really it. And then team left 10 on base, but had 12 base runners. Again, not it, but you know what? Sometimes you do just enough and you still get an A on the paper or turn it in at 11:59 PM. And that's kind of what we did.
Hey, C's get degrees, baby.
Hey.
Defensively, the only thing I had, or actually, you know what? You want to take this since you're just
funny
taking my segments?
Funny.
You want to go ahead about it?
That's okay. That's all you.
You sure?
I'm so sorry. I'm absolutely sure. I'm absolutely sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Defensively, the only thing that I have to talk about in this one is that in the bottom of the 9th, Ahmed drops a ball on a transfer from a flip from Jimenez that would have been the game-ending double play. Instead, Detroit ties it up and takes it into extras.
Yeah, back-to-back games. Agenda's strong. Yeah. I love Ahmed plays hard. I love him. My problem with Ahmed is just that people act like he's Jose or Andres Jimenez or some superstar. He gets hits in bunches. He's red hot and it is so much fun. It is fun when it's going. But there's this thing called regressing to the mean or an average, which means what it's all going to be when the book closes at the end of the year. And stop acting like he's like a 130 WRC plus. He's like a 105 and that's still like going to be a career high for him. The defense is the biggest improvement, and I like him, and he plays hard, but makes it easy to want to correct people all the time and look like an asshole. Anyway, pitching analysis. Nice bounce back start for Plesac, who needed it desperately. Again, it's against the Tigers, but who cares? We'll take it, and hopefully it can give him some confidence. Went 6 1/3 of one run ball, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. So that's cooking. Took him 100 pitches, 63 of which were strikes. So not too bad of a strike to ball percentage there. Maybe a little on the lower end, but getting it done. And he only had one base runner in the first 3 innings. Gives up a couple singles in the fourth, but worked out of it, which is big for him. 1-2-3 fifth. And then he gives up a 2-out solo shot to known loser Javi Baez in the sixth. But that's baseball. It's going to happen. Even a broken clock.
Javi Baez has that swing where it's all or nothing.
Yeah. A broken clock is right twice a day. Baez gets a home run. Who fucking cares? Then he gets the first batter out to open up the seventh, but then gets pulled for Henches. So I don't know that I watched when that happened. Probably a matchup thing, or well, no, I guess he got to 100 pitches, so that's probably why. But yeah, good solid outing, and hopefully he can build on it. So Henches then goes an inning and a third of total work, gives up a hit, strikes out 3. Feels like he's really been on a roll lately after a little probably dicey, what, like mid-July before the All-Star break, maybe right after, felt like he was struggling a little bit, if I remember. And lately, it seems like he's coming in and dropping it off. Stefan comes in for the final out of the eighth to pick up Henches. Stays on for the save in the ninth, since Class A got used in back-to-back nights. He walks Harold Castro to start the inning, so this is the ninth, and then gives up a single to Willie Castro. And then an RBI double to Jonathan Scope, so that makes it 3-2, Guardians still. But now we got runners on second and third with nobody out, and it's the bottom of the ninth. So we're like, well, this is not looking good for not getting walked off. But he strikes out the next batter, intentionally walks Miggy to load the bases, and then so bases are loaded, 3-2 Guardians in the bottom of the ninth with the Tigers up. Bring it, 2 outs, bring in Eniel De Los Santos, who gives up an RBI ground out, and that ties the game. But then he ends up striking out Riley Green to get out of the inning and avoid the walk-off. This was not looking good. We're all like, okay,
come on. Bases loaded with 1 out, not bases loaded with 2 outs.
Oh, sorry, yeah, bases loaded with 1 out. And then, yeah, RBI ground out, and then gets the strikeout on Green. But yeah, when it was literally a one run game, runners on second and third, nobody out with Stefan, we're all like, oh, yeah, come on, man.
And if Ahmed would have just turned that double play, it would have been game over. It wouldn't have gone into extras.
Tough, but we worked through it. We win this game, so it is what it is. Yeah, which I said, after OG saves the day in the top of the 10th, Brian Shaw comes out for the save, pitches a perfect inning of relief, strikes out 2, because what else should we expect from him? Exactly the opposite of what I would expect. And then I'm not going to say a fucking word. This is all you.
You sure?
I could not be more sure about anything other than my love for you.
All right. All right. So Alex's special notes in this one, Zach Meisel tweeted out that over the last six seasons, the Tigers have swept an opponent in 3 or 4 game series 17 times. In those same 6 seasons, Cleveland has swept the Tigers alone 13 times.
Know your fucking place, trash.
Rent free. We own your franchise.
Jesus Christ. In 6 seasons, they've only swept any team 17 times, but we've swept them 13. That's nuts.
Yeah. And then Nick Padone tweeted out that the Guardians are 85-34 against the Detroit Tigers since 2016. Utter dominance. So know your place.
Yep. And again, whether it's riding the high or in a tough spot in life, mental health's always important, and it's something that you always got to work on, something we preach all the time. Like I said, my life's great. Things are awesome. I've got an amazing wife, a beautiful baby boy that's healthy, great family, great friends, awesome podcast, amazing best friend, great career. And I still see a therapist, seeing Dr. Roth next Thursday. Keep things tuned up. So no matter how things are going, whether you need help, whether you don't, BetterHelp's there with a great option. And you can listen to me tell you all about it. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, or overwhelmed, BetterHelp is here to help. Everyone goes through tough times. Everyone has stuff they're dealing with. We've preached about the importance of mental health several times before as it relates to athletes, our listeners, and even to ourselves. Paul and I are no strangers, and I know I'm certainly not. In the summer of 2020, I started having a little bit of depression and anxiety issues for the first time in my life. But I took the leap, I reached out to a therapist, and got the help that I needed. And man, I'm glad that I did. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private, online environment at your convenience. BetterHelp's network includes a broad range of expertise from their more than 20,000 therapists, which gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. Finding the right therapist is one of the most important parts in making sure you get the help that you need. It's going to be easy, guys. You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs and then get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It's that quick. Then you're going to schedule a secure video and phone session. Even better, you can exchange unlimited messages with your therapist and everything you share is completely confidential. BetterHelp knows that it's scary to reach out and take that first step for your mental health, so they make it as easy as possible for you. You can request a new therapist at any time at no additional charge, which is a game changer, guys, helping you find the right therapist for your needs. So, go ahead and join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And you know Paul and I were going to hook you up. BetterHelp was kind enough to create a special offer for 216 Baseball listeners. We're going to get you 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/216baseball. Again, that's betterhelp.com/216baseball. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And now back to the show. All right. I don't know about you, but after listening to that life-changing message from that suave gentleman with the BetterHelp ad read, I definitely want to reach out and take charge of my mental health. But no, seriously, I've said it already a bunch, but take charge of it. And shout out to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. So 216 Baseball Pod, use that code, 10% off your first month. So game one of the Toronto series, saw a cool graphic coming into this. It was from MLB Network and said notable Guardians contact rates with their MLB ranks. And Stephen Kwan has a 92.3% contact rate, which is second best in baseball. I don't know who number one is, but I don't know who could top that, but that's insane. Miles Straw has an 89.3% contact percentage. That is fourth best in baseball. And Jose is at 87.8, which is 12th best in baseball. So we just stay different and putting bat on ball, baby. So Quantrill versus Barrios. Guardians come into Friday night's game in Toronto ready for some real competition as they face the Blue Jays on their home AstroTurf. See what I did there? The current holder of the number one wild card spot. Imagine being in the wild card race, though, and not the division lead, because I literally can't imagine fighting for a wild card. We only win divisions over here. Anyways, big time series as we try to hold on to our division lead and hopefully grow it, but it's not going to be easy. We do send Big Daddy Dick Cal Quantrill to the bump in his homecoming outing, and he stays red hot after that Astros start, proving that his massive man meat stretches across all of North America, not just the U.S. Offense explodes behind his legacy outing as well, as we route the Jays to take game one, extending our winning streak to 6, which absolute chills. Quick line, Cleveland 8 runs on 14 hits, no errors. Toronto, no runs on 3 hits and no errors. So love to see that lopsided box score. Offensive highlights, after a quiet first 2 innings, the boys turn on the Jets in the top of the 3rd. With one out, Hedges gets hit by pitch, which Benson follows up with a single to right field. Stephen Kwan then lays down the most beautiful cue shot bunt you will ever see. Hits the third base bag. Nothing they could do in that scenario. They just had to watch it and just straight as an arrow. That loads the bases and still only one out. Ahmed then rips a single to center field, scoring Hedges and Benson, and advances to second on that play because they tried to make a play at the plate. Guards now lead at 2-0 early, and we still have runners on second and third with one out. Jose then hits a sac fly to center. That brings home Kwan, so now we're up 3-0. And then Josh Naylor hits a two-run bomb to left field. That's his 15th of the year. And just like that, the Guardians lead the Blue Jays 5-0, which just makes my soul sing. Top of the fourth, Austin Hedges draws a leadoff walk, but gets replaced at first on a Will Benson fielder's choice, but we'll take that all day. Big speed difference between those two. Kwan then walks to put runners on first and second. And then with two outs, Jose literally golfs a pitch almost in the dirt over the right center field wall. Nobody still understands how this actually happened. But that blast is his 22nd of the year, and the Guardians now lead at 8-0. And we're just absolutely blowing the Blue Jays' backs out. It doesn't get much better than this, folks. And we make them sweat a few more times over the next five innings, but we don't score again. Not that it really mattered, because we took the Bluebirds out back. And Jose had a huge day at the plate. He goes 3-for-3 with 4 RBI and a walk. They literally never got him out. And then love to see that home run, too, because that part of his game has been missing the last 2 months or so for the most part. And it's in there, man. And then Jones went 3-for-5, all singles. Naylor went 2-for-5 with the two-run blast. And OG just keeps hitting, going 2-for-5. So, yeah, a lot of good performances in this one. And we smoked the Blue Jays, and my soul was happy.
On the broadcast, they called Josh Naylor the Massasauga Masher, because that's where he's from in Canada. It's like Massasauga or Mississauga, some shit like that. They called him the Massasauga Masher. It's one of my favorite things that I've heard in a long time.
That is the most Canadian town or whatever name I think I've ever heard. Just Massasauga. Yeah.
And then Kyle Quantrill is also from Canada, from like Fort Hope or something.
Yeah.
They're both like within an hour of Toronto, so it was cool for both of them to see both of them have like a really good day.
Yeah, Hammy said on Saturday or Sunday, I think, that Naylor's high school baseball coach or something along that line came to see him all weekend, which
chills. That's cool shit.
It is. So key stats, 4 strikeouts to 3 walks. I mean, we're cooking the strike-to-walkout ratio in this episode last week. I mean, shit. 14 hits, only 2 of them for extra base hits, which is kind of wild. I mean, you got a 3-run shot and a 2-run shot, but that's still wild. You score 8 runs, but I mean, hey, 5 of them came from those two. 4-for-10 with runners in scoring position, .400 average, obviously, clutch. And then we left 10 on base, even though we had 19 base runners. Still, there's nothing to complain about here.
Yeah. So defensively in this one, the only thing I have is in the bottom of the first, Stephen Kwan makes a fantastic leaping catch on a ball that looks like it's going to be hit over his head. He kind of like jumps up, catches it over his shoulder, falls down. Just very good instincts out there and left.
But the thing we forgot to take into account is that he's different.
Yeah,
that was a great catch, though. That was a wildly good catch. So pitching analysis, Cal Quantrill legacy game. I mean, no other way to put this. He dropped off 7 innings of scoreless, 1 hit, no walk, 7 strikeout ball. He was perfect
back through, home in Canada.
Yeah, perfect through 3. Then he gave out a 1-out.
Austin Hedges walk.
That's in real time. He gave up a 1-out double to Vladdy Jr. in the 4th, but then sat down the next 11 batters in order to finish his start. He literally went 7 perfect innings, except for the 1 hit. So obviously not perfect innings.
So but just Vlad like, Guerrero Jr.
Yeah, it's just so like crazy.
I think that was his 21st.
Might have been even higher than that. I think he was on like a 23 or 24 game hit streak, if that's what you're going for.
I think that game was 21st.
Yeah. It was wild. But regardless, I mean, except for 1 hit, he was perfect otherwise for 7 innings. Yeah. Just absolutely insane. So, yeah. And I mean, when he was scuffling last month, you know, Quantrill's ERA peaked at like 4.08 off the top of my head. And it's already down to 3.67 again. So don't disrespect Cal fucking Quantrill because he's different. Okay. Anybody saying, oh, I don't know about Quantrill. Shut up. Anyway. Bullpen basically has a day off with an 8-run lead and 6 outs to go. So we bring in Eli to get some work. He gives up a hit and strikes out 1, but pitches a scoreless inning. And then Sandlin comes in for the ninth, gives up a hit, but pitches a scoreless inning. And yeah, this one was just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Love to see it.
Special notes in this one. It's a cool graphic. Do you want to
No, oh my god. Jesus, never lived that down. That's well, all
the,
you.
The cool things to talk about is the stuff that you always want to talk about and leave me with the normal stuff. So, you sure?
I'm fine. Yeah, that's okay. All you.
So it's a graphic from the broadcast. It says, start me up, Guardians starting pitching. Last six games, 4-0, with 38 and a third innings pitched, with a 0.70 ERA, a 0.55 WHIP, giving up one home run, only four walks and 38 strikeouts, which is pretty fucking good.
Jeez, 0.7 earned run and a 0.55 WHIP in last six games. Whew. That is how you go on a hot streak. That is a very good formula for that to take place. So game two is McKenzie versus White. Guardians come into Saturday afternoon's game feeling like the baddest motherfuckers in North America, because they are. And they now won six in a row and took game one in commanding fashion behind an offensive rout and a Cal Quantrill masterpiece. Cleveland sends T-Mac to the bump in game two to try and make it seven in a row and secure a series win right away. He pitches brilliantly, but the offense used up all their powers the night before, and we drop game two. Box score is Toronto 2 runs on 6 hits, 1 error. Cleveland 1 run on 6 hits and no errors. Offensive highlights, top of the first, Stephen Kwan draws a leadoff walk to start the game, and with 2 outs, steals second base. That's his 11th of the year. Josh Naylor then draws a walk to put runners on first and second. And who else but Andrés Giménez rips an RBI single to center, scores Kwan, and the Guardians take an early 1-0 lead and look ready to run it right back after Friday's offensive onslaught. It was like, oh boy, here we go. We can't lose. But we couldn't get a hit in the clutch after the first inning to save our life. They scatter another 5 hits and 2 walks across 8 innings, and we have nothing to show for it because we only put up one measly run, and that makes me sad. This shit happens, but, you know, frustrating to see T-Mac to take a loss after giving up only 2 runs, especially when we had a ton of opportunities to get it done. Giménez was the only batter with a strong performance, 2-for-2 with the RBI single, and he walked twice, and he stole his 15th bag of the year. So it's crazy. So,
yeah,
Jays never got him out. Want to say that. Key stats, 7 strikeouts, 4 walks. Excellent. 6 hits, 1 extra base hit is what it is. 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. That is a 100 average, and that is why we lost this game. And we left 9 on base and had 10 base runners because math and yeah.
Defensively in this one, in the bottom of the first, Nolan Jones makes a great sliding catch, doing his best Miles Straw impression on a ball hit the shallow right field. It's good to see him make good outfielder plays when he's not a natural outfielder. You know what I mean? It's cool to see like the instincts start kicking in and him just go out there and be an athlete and let it show. And then in the bottom of the seventh, Andrés Giménez makes probably one of the best plays you'll see all year. On a ball hit to his left, he spins and delivers a strike to the plate for the third out of the inning to keep the game within one. Runs a mile and a half, gets to a ball that he probably shouldn't have gotten to, somehow keeps his momentum going, spins, and delivers a strike to home plate.
Was that in this game? I thought that was in game 3. Okay, no. So I had it mixed up then. That's my bad.
Yeah, that's why I said you mean the one in, because this he did it and it kept it within one.
Okay, I don't know why.
Them getting an insurance run.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, let me focus on the defensive stuff. Like,
hey, I did that off the top of my head. I didn't do it during this. I'm not questioning you. That was off the top of my head at the beginning of the episode. We all
when I said I said you mean the one that was in the second game, and you're like, no, it was definitely in the third.
Hey, I got it mixed up. It do be like that sometimes. I see you do be mixing stuff up sometimes too.
I do be do be do. But you came at me strong with it.
I didn't feel like I did, but I apologize if I did. I must. I really thought it was game 3. We're one on away from beating the Tigers because know your place. Let's go. So pitching analysis. T-Mac continues his hot streak. 6 2/3, 2-run ball, 5 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. 2 runs came from solo shots in the bottom of the 5th and the bottom of the 7th, which is his MO, unfortunately. But at least they were solo shots. If you're going to give them up, keep them to that. And regardless, no one complained about 6 2/3, a 2-run ball. Brilliant outing, worked to the entire strike zone. He just hangs breaking balls right in the middle of the zone once or twice a game and gets punished. It's kind of the same shit all the time. But still, really nice outing from T-Mac, and hopefully doesn't hang his head at all because he did a great job. And then De Los Santos comes out for the final out of the 7th and stays on for the 8th. He goes an inning and a 3rd total of scoreless relief, gives up 1 hit and strikes out 2, but offense couldn't get it done. It's definitely on them. Game 3 is Bieber versus Gausman. Guardians come into Sunday afternoon's game bummed about their win streak getting snapped, but they're not too upset as the Twins bullpen. I know, ball game, baby, let's go. As the Twins bullpen melted down yet again in the 9th against the Angels, and so Cleveland keeps their game and a half lead over Minnesota for first place. Plus, I mean, you lost a 1-run game that was 2-1, so that's baseball sometimes. So
still, one of the best teams in the American League.
Yeah, still reasons to keep your head up. But yeah, most importantly, the fact that Minnesota lost too, because their bullpen is absolute cheeks. So nice little Christmas present. To the
Angels, who are not good this year.
Who blew it like in the 9th. It was so bad. So tough loss the day before, but we competed. And luckily for game 3, we've got our ace, Shane Bieber, going for us in the rubber match. He battles with Gausman in this one and puts on a show, but offense steps up and puts the team on their back behind a Bieber great outing. I just had a stroke, I'm pretty sure. Sorry.
You were trying to say masterclass.
Yeah, I was. And then I was like, I don't know that I would call it that. So then I kind of had a stroke. Cleveland, 7 runs on 13 hits, no errors. Toronto, 2 runs, 8 hits, 1 error. And real quick, you know what I've noticed? We have been, and it's no coincidence, we've been playing a much better brand of like defensive baseball in general. I feel like I rarely say that.
That's the recipe for winning.
Oh, it is. I'm just saying. I feel like
offense
lately,
puts asses in seats, but defense wins you championships and games. So
that is a good way to put it. Offense puts asses in seats, but defense. I don't know that I've ever heard the first part of that mantra before, but I love it.
It's just something that I kind of came up with.
You should put that on a t-shirt.
Okay.
Okay.
Good thing we sell t-shirts.
True. Merch store.
Cheap plug.
Yeah. Link in the episode description. Sorry about that. Offensive highlights. Top of the 1st with 1 out. Ahmed Rosario hits a solo shot to dead center. That's his 8th of the year. And just like that, the Guardians take a 1-0 lead. I think that was, 408 feet? Does that sound right?
Why do I want to say 422? Why is that what is?
I think that was 1 a couple weeks ago. I thought it was a little less than that. I thought it was like 408. Either way, it was like in the 400s. Center. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I can try to find it.
Don't worry about it. I just didn't know if you remembered off the top of your head. Top of the 2nd, Owen Miller hits a leadoff.
I didn't watch a lot of these games with me being on nights. Yeah. And they were like at weird times. I was working from 10 at night till 6 in the morning. So I was waking up at weird times and not catching a lot of these.
Okay. Yeah, I watched a decent amount. Not a majority, but enough. Like half of kind of all of them. Mm-hmm. I watched a decent amount of this one, actually. I watched damn near all of it, actually. So top of the 2nd, Owen Miller leadoff ground rule double on a ball that was hit just right. And it wedged between the bottom of the left field wall and the warning track. It didn't even bounce. It literally just went plunk and got in there. Couldn't do that again if he tried a million times, probably. With 1 out, Austin Hedges then hits an RBI single to center field, little blooper that gets misplayed by Blue Jays center fielder Tapia, and Owen scores on that play, giving the Guardians a 2-1 lead, if I could talk. Top of the 4th with 1 out, Tyler Freeman infield single to first base on a ball that Vladdy Jr. dove for. It was an awesome play to stop it, but then from his butt, he fumbled the transfer, and the ball just kind of squirted away, and so he can't make a throw. So Freeman's safe, and he takes advantage by stealing 2nd, and Alejandro Kirk, the Blue Jays catcher, throwing error, puts it into center field, and so Freeman goes to 3rd on that, which opens up Austin Hedges' RBI double to bring Freeman home, and guards take a 3-1 lead, and Paul has absolute chills.
Yep, I'm bricked up right now.
Top of the 5th, Ahmed Rosario leadoff walk, advances to 2nd on a wild pitch by Kevin Gausman. Then with 1 out, Josh Naylor brings him home with an RBI single to right field, which Whit Merrifield was playing in the shift in shallow right, kind of like they always play Jose, and he makes a dive for this, but the ball deflects off his chest, and so it kind of squirts into center field as well. And so that allows Ahmed to go, well, second to home on that single. But yeah, it was just a weird play. And we're up 4-1. And then still the top of the fifth with two outs, Owen Miller, RBI double to right field, which OG scores on from first because he's fast as fuck. And we now lead it 5-1 because we are just a pest. It's like we just keep nitpicking at the Blue Jays. And we don't stop either. Top
small
of the
ball, baby.
Yep, that's our brand.
I fucking love it.
I know. Top of the ninth with two outs, Stephen Kwan singles to right field, proceeds to steal second base. That's his 12th of the year. Ahmed Rosario then hits an RBI single to center field. That and advances to second on the play at the plate, and we lead it 6-2 now. Again, this is in the ninth with a three with a two-run lead at this point. Three-run lead, and there's already two outs in the ninth, and we're still just pestering. I love it. And still, the top of the ninth, Jose, RBI single to center field. That scores Ahmed and makes it 7-2 Guardians, because we just don't quit. Doesn't matter, like I said. It's just nuts. Lots of offense in this one, but a big day from Ahmed. 3-for-4 with two RBI, three runs scored and a walk and a solo shot, home run, just doing everything. And we can't forget Hedges either. 2-for-4 with a double and two RBI. He just keeps on rolling at the plate somehow, and we're here for it, just locked in.
I think as of to like up to today, I think Ahmed is still like up there in the league for hits.
Yeah. I think he's like top five or so.
Yeah. I want to say like he was fourth today in all of baseball for hits. He has like 120,
probably more than that.
I don't know what he hit today, but going up in his first at bat today, it was like 129 hits in 108 games or something like that.
He do be slapping the ball around.
Yeah.
Lots of singles. But lately, Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
He's been
maybe he had ringworm.
Yeah. He's been very streaky, though, but seems like he makes it count. It's weird because
I'm surprised we didn't talk about that during the Hot Topic.
I know. I think I blew that, but we could talk about that next week.
Yeah.
Okay. I should have remembered that. That is dumb. Yeah. And the game's offensive performance was very on brand. Like I said already a million times, just pestered people to death, and that's what we do. Key stats, 9 strikeouts to 2 walks. Yeah, it is what it is. Not amazing, but 13 hits, 4 of them were for extra bases. Awesome. 5-for-13 with runners in scoring position. That's a .385 average. That'll do it. And we only left 6 on base, even though we had 15 base runners.
Yeah. Defensively, the only thing that happened is that in the bottom of the fourth, Tyler Freeman makes a great diving play on a little two-hopper, hit to third base, hops up, and then throws the ball to first to get the out.
Love it. Pitching analysis overall, very nice outing from Bieber, who had one of the worst starts of his career earlier this year against the Blue Jays. He gets his revenge though. He goes 7 innings, a 2-run ball, does give up 8 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts. I mean, they were hitting him, but he did what aces do. He works around it and included a ballsy final inning where he put 2 on in a 3-run game, and they still pitched to Vladdy Jr. for the 4th time that day and got him to ground out. So he worked out of it. And he was close to 100 pitches at that point because he finished with 99. Plus, I watched this happen. Bieber did his thing. So 73 of those 99 pitches were for strikes too, which is cooking. That is pounding the zone. The Blue Jays hitters did quickly pick up that they could just kind of keep pulling the ball the other way on him. But he made the adjustments and gave us a really solid outing, which is, again, what an ace does. Stephen came out for the 8th with a 3-run lead to protect. He needs a bounce back after his meltdown on Thursday against the Tigers. Perfect inning of relief. Strikes out 2, just what the doctor ordered. And then Clase comes out for the 9th in a non-save situation just to get some work in. Perfect inning of relief. Strikes out 1, and it only took him 10 pitches to get it done. His ERA is now down to 1.29, which I'm pretty sure is good, but I'm not 100% sure. So I was hoping for some input.
Yeah, it's Jesus Christ. If he doesn't win reliever of the year, there's a couple things that are just going to make me riot. If Stephen Kwan doesn't get votes for rookie of the year, and if Emmanuel Clase doesn't win reliever of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one in the American League. The only person you can compare him to is Edwin Diaz, even though Clase's numbers are better, in my opinion. Less strikeouts, yeah. But who cares?
Edwin Diaz just has that dope-ass entrance.
True, but in the American League, it's absolutely Clase. It's not even close. Yeah.
So. And Kwan has to get Rookie of the Year votes.
Yeah, he has to.
Special notes in this one, starting pitchers in the last eight games, 4-1 with a 1.21 ERA, pitching 52 innings, giving up 30 hits, 7 runs, 6 walks, 47 strikeouts, and a .69 whip. I feel like 30 hits is, I mean, 88 games, that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's still up there a decent bit, but.
Yeah, but like no walks, a .69 yeah. whip, nice, is wild.
And then Jensen Lewis tweeted out that ace Shane Bieber's last four starts, including today, in the last four starts, 1.67 ERA, six plus innings pitched in all four games, 3 walks, 30 strikeouts, 5 hits or fewer in 3 of 4 games, and it's only given up 1 home run and 102 at-bats.
That is quite the stretch.
Yeah,
that'll do, donkey. Nuts. That'll
30 do. Strikeouts in 4 games. Remember that crazy streak he had going last year?
Yeah, that was wild.
No, it was like what?
It wasn't even necessary.
Like, what was it? I forget how many games it was with 12 plus strikeouts.
No, it was 8 or more strikeouts for like 12 or 13 innings in a row.
Maybe that's where I got 12 from.
It was still nuts.
Yeah. Crazy. So who's hot, who's not list? Starting out with the who's hot. Stephen Kwan staying on. He's going up to an A. He was B+. Last week he had a 774 OPS. In his last 7 games, he's batting .296 with a .424 OBP. Holy shit. And a .519 slugging. For a .943 OPS. We said last week he needed a big week to stay on because you can't just linger. And he heard us and was like, okay, big week, no big deal. 8-for-27 with a double, a triple, a home run, 8 runs, an RBI, 6 walks, only 3 strikeouts, 3 stolen bases, golden glove defense, just everything you want to be in a leadoff guy.
He's the man. He said... Yeah. He said, you said I had to step it up, and I took that personally. So,
Andrés Giménez, he's staying on. He's up to an A. He was a B last week. Last week, he had a .736 OPS. In his last 7 games, he's batting .409 with a .500 OBP with a .455 slugging and a .955 OPS. We said the same thing about him that we said about Kwan, but... was in even more danger of falling off because you can't linger. But he gave us the double bird because he goes 9-for-22 with 3 runs, an RBI, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, 4 stolen bases while playing platinum glove level defense. Just the plays that he made last week is everything I love seeing and more. It was, he flashed the range, flashed the arm, flashed the glove, but it was the instincts that he had to those couple plays where he threw home, got Eric Haas out, and then that spinning throw when he threw Vladdy out at home, knowing where to go with the ball, when to take his steps, stuff like that. And it just all comes into fruition, and it's just so good to see.
Yeah. He's just exploded, man. It's like scary how good he is.
Yeah. It's nuts. And we have him. We have control over him for what, like another two years?
Like 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Damn. Four at least. At least 4.
I love that. T-Mac, he's on at an A. Last seven starts, 209 ERA with a 9.3 whip, 47 and a third innings pitch, 44 strikeouts. He's been brilliant lately, mowed down the Astros, and then he had a very good start against the Blue Jays, but obviously we lost. Has a 209 ERA across seven starts.
Which is also excellent.
Yeah. And then the fourth person, which we said we were only going to do three, but Emmanuel Clase is just built completely different, and it's not fair to everyone else.
Permanently on. And
yeah, he's S tier, like we've talked about. Best reliever in baseball. Best closer in baseball. Last seven games, 1.42 ERA, four saves, six and a third, three hits, one run, seven strikeouts, 0.47 whip, which is fucking nuts. In his last 15 games, 1.26 ERA, seven saves, 0.35 whip. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Honorable mentions, Ahmed once again, just slapping the ball around. Had a couple slip-ups defensively, but just a 771 OPS from him, which is solid, but other players are doing better. In his last 15, he has a 764 OPS. And just a lot of home runs lately over the week.
Yeah, prior to the home run, prior to like this game, because this is the one where he slapped, right? He went, yeah, 3-for-4 with all that. Prior to that, he had like a 250 OBP or something. Like, yeah. It's just like these little like peaks and valleys. It's like, whoop, big dip. And then it's like, oh, it's like kind of above or close to it. And then it like goes right back down. So, yeah. I mean, hey, he's still playing hard and stuff. But
yeah.
Same thing as last week. Where it's like you feel like it's a little better than it is, then you dig into the numbers, you're like, huh, okay.
He's had some timely hitting.
Yeah. It's weird because he sucks at high leverage by like the definition FanGraphs uses, but then he does come up with these hits. It's just like when the game's on the line, one, you know, tie game, that kind of stuff, he just chokes. He did it again today.
Yeah.
I knew exactly what was going to happen, and it happened. I was like, yep. Same shit, different day.
Biebs, he's on, probably should have been on the list in his last three starts, 1.8 ERA with a 0.85 whip. In his last seven, 3.21 ERA and a 0.97 whip. It's pretty good. And then you heard us talk about Austin Hedges and Luke Maley at the top of the episode. We brought up their stats, their weighted runs combined plus, and their OPS in the last we went through all that stuff, and you guys know how I feel about Austin Hedges. So,
bricked up. Who's not?
Always. Paul? I'm always bricked up for always. Austin Hedges. 24/7. Just pitching tents.
Jesus. All right. Who's not?
Who's not list? Cal Quantrill's getting taken the fuck off. He was at a C-. Back-to-back fantastic starts for Cal. Going 13 total innings of scoreless baseball against the Astros and the Blue Jays. 0.38 whip. Yeah, that'll get you taken off. In his last seven games, 3.27 ERA, 5-0, 1.06 whip. One more good start from being on the Who's Hot list. Huh? Maybe?
Yeah, whoops.
And then... whoops. Going on to the people that are on the Who's Not list, Miles Straw, he's down to an F, was a D-. Last week at a 3.32 OPS. Last seven games, batting .08 with a .08 OBP and a .08 slugging for a 160 OPS. His last 15 games, 270 OPS. Just same thing we talked about at the beginning of the year, just the defense is like platinum level center field defense. And he was starting to figure it out and then fell off again.
Yeah. Hard. It's just going to be a year to forget. I still believe in him long term, but I just, year to forget, dude. I don't know what is going on.
I will say, offensively, it's a year to forget. Not only does...
oh, yeah, of course.
What I will say, I want to get into something about Miles Straw. Yes, the defense is ungodly. We talk about that. But I credit both Stephen Kwan and then Oscar Gonzalez, Nolan Jones, and Will Benson. The success that they've had this year, I credit a lot of it to Miles Straw.
Okay. Can you want to extrapolate on why? Because it's mostly been offensive. I mean, just defensively, I'm sure he's providing tips and they've looked pretty good out there. But
well, Stephen Kwan's looked fantastic out there.
Yeah.
But think about this, right? Stephen Kwan's a center fielder by trade. He's not a corner outfielder. Gets called up. Obviously, he's not going to play center field with Miles Straw out there. But Miles Straw's, like, having someone like Miles Straw play center field and knowing the range he has, knowing the plays that he can make, lets your corner outfielders loosen up a little bit. And especially when these young kids come up, having them play loose and not worry about the pressure of being a rookie in Major League Baseball is how you're going to have successful rookies.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I think
Miles Straw's a big reason why they're playing how they are.
I need you to further define that, like in general or just defensively?
In general.
I would push back on that a little bit. I think you're overvaluing it slightly, but I think it helps. I don't think you're wrong that it helps.
If you play good defense and you're playing a comfortable defensive position, that translates over to the box.
Yeah, I think it helps, but it's nowhere near how I would say, like, and I know you're not comparing this, but like we let Hedges off the hook a lot because he controls the game. Like he makes a monstrous impact. And so like if he's like a 10, I'd give this like a 2. Like, it helps, but I think it's part of being a good teammate. But it's also 2.5, because he does have so much range that he lets other guys relax. But I wouldn't go too crazy with this. But it is a good benefit that helps them. I agree with everything you're saying, but I just think a lot of guys do this in different ways, personally. Like, I wouldn't say that, like, Kwan is having this year just because he knows that Straw is out there. Like,
patrolling. I didn't say that.
No, I know, but I'm saying like, if you're more comfortable on defense and you play good defense, it will help you on offense. Except for Straw is the anomaly, but in general, it's absolutely true. But I don't think, although Nolan Jones is starting to struggle, I don't know. I think you're drawing maybe a little more of a bridge than there is there, but it is a factor in helping these guys be comfortable. So,
I think which is this, just exactly what I said.
I know, but I think you're weighting it heavier than I would for sure. But it's something.
You literally just said the same exact thing.
No, I know. My whole argument is though, I think that I can just tell, at least in the way you're presenting it, I think you're weighting it heavier than I would, like what that is doing to these kids.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying is the weight.
Zach, please, Zach, he's staying on. He goes from a D- to a D+. He had a very good bounce back start against the Tigers last week, going 6 1/3 of 1-run ball, but needed to see more of it because it was the Tigers and he was doing really bad. Still gets no run support, which pisses me off. And I still have faith in Zach Plesac because he's a fucking gamer. Last three starts, still has a 5.74 ERA and a 0.166 whip. A 1.66.
Which is not good. So no. D+, it's going to take him like two more solid outings, I'm not going to lie, to get off. Unless it's like, yeah, I don't even know. It's probably going to take two more. But get your way back, King. We need you to end the stretch. Let's go.
Nolan Jones, he's going on at a D+. Just came up here and was playing out of his gourd, but then he's cooled off. In his last seven games, spent 250 with a 250 OBP with a 250 slugging for a 500 OPS. In his last 15 games, 245 batting average, excuse me, a 275 OBP, a 367 slugging for a 624 OPS. Just part of being a big leaguer, ups and downs. Everyone goes through it. We see it with Miles Straw already. We talked about it with Ahmed with his peaks and valleys. It's just part about being up here. Not worried. He has a 35% strikeout rate in his last seven games and a 33% strikeout game in his last 15, but he's going to find it. I have faith in him.
Yeah, I agree. And today, man, game one, did he strike out? Did he get the golden sombrero? It was bad.
I don't know. I had it on, but I wasn't paying attention to it.
He struck out at least three times. I know that for a fact. Let me pull it up real fast, even though this can go into next week's ep. It was just three, but Jesus, dude, you got to figure that out. All right, AL Central standings. I want to make sure I note this, that notice I didn't say plus wild card update, because we ain't going for a wild card, boys and girls. We're going for a fucking division. Whoops. Hey, go on your app, figure out the fucking wild card on your own. I ain't telling you. I don't give a shit about that. First place, Cleveland Guardians. 61-53. I got a fucking attitude. 7-3 in our last 10. Let's go, baby. Second place, Twins. Trash. 58-55. 2.5 back. I don't care how they're doing in the last 10. Eat my ass. White Sox.
Can I say something?
No. Is it important? Because I'm fired up.
It has to do with this.
Give me a second. White Sox. Okay. Oh, it's our division. Is anybody else going to show up? Yeah, your team tweeted that out. How's third place, bitch? 59-56. You can see it in my face. I ain't fucking around right now. 2.5 back. How's that feel? Huh? Chirac. All right? Get the fuck out of here. Kansas City, I don't care how they're doing. They're 14 back. Eat my balls. Detroit, 19 back. Get relegated to the minor leagues. Couldn't give a shit about you. Lost 7 in a row. We just made that 8. Eat my ass. Guardians, baby. Let's go.
Remember right, at I'm the good. Beginning of the year when I said we win 85 games?
And no, you said 95, and I had to correct you.
Well, but even when I said...
Then you came back down. You came back down to 85.
And then even when I said 85, you looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, I'll admit that. I did. Quincy did an awesome job, I know, right? Challenge for Alex, not to mention Quincy 400 times. But if you haven't checked out the Cleveland Guardians fan cast, make sure you do. Check out today's episode Monday, because Quincy went through the rest of the schedule and added up all the games to try and figure it out. And conservatively, we should win 85 games. We'll fuck around and win 88. I'm not going to lie. That's our ceiling. But like 85 is kind of like a very realistic, and that's wild.
Yeah. I just want, if we end up winning 85 games, I feel like I deserve some sort of fucking trophy.
I know. We'll take it. All right, Guardians news, baby. And do not read it one time and then paraphrase.
You know that I have to, right?
No.
I have to. So on Tuesday, Guardians Prospector tweeted out that 22-year-old catching prospect Bo Naylor throws a runner out trying to steal second base tonight in the first inning for Columbus. Naylor has thrown out 40% of runners trying to steal that season. 40% is not great, but it's not bad. It's about average. Love to see it. And then Thursday, they tweeted out that 22-year-old catching prospect Bo Naylor extends his on-base streak to 12 straight games with a base hit to lead off the game for Columbus against St. Paul. And then they also tweeted out that 22-year-old catching prospect Bo Naylor with his 8th double with Columbus and 20th on the season. Naylor's now 2-for-3 in the game and has a 9.49 OPS in 35 AAA games.
How old is he again? Sorry, I missed it.
22.
Okay, gotcha. I was on Twitter for
a second. Yeah, he's a catching prospect.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Tuesday, Guardian Perspective tweeted out that 24-year-old right-handed pitching prospect Xavion Curry had a no-hitter through 5 innings in his second straight outstanding start for Columbus. He now has a 3.09 ERA with Columbus. The line, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts in his last 2 starts. 13 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 6 walks, 10 strikeouts, and obviously a 0 ERA.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
And speaking of Xavion Curry, that's all you.
Oh, okay. Well, you started talking about it, so I didn't know if you were going to do it.
No, it's all you.
He's to be promoted on Monday to start a game 2 of the doubleheader versus Detroit. In his last 2 starts at Columbus, you already heard me talk about it.
Yep. It starts in like 5 minutes. So congrats to the kid. I was going to put it at the top of the episode, but just thought, well, we had some kind of different things. But yeah, Xavion Curry, everyone says he's a great guy. Just says he's like an 80 grade. Saw someone say he's an 80 grade just makeup, like just a great guy that you can root for. And yeah, I just saw a tweet literally a couple minutes ago from Zach Meisel that said that, or it might have been the Guardians account, that that's our like 14th call up this year. Yeah, like 14th nuts. Debut. That's wild.
I wonder what the most in one season has been.
I feel like I remember someone saying it's like 22 or something. I don't know. Oh, yeah, that could be completely wrong. I have no idea. That's just like a random, for some reason, I was thinking that.
So Thursday, Guardians Perspective tweeted out that says, he did it again. Guardians 22-year-old shortstop prospect Gabriel Arias goes deep for the second time tonight for Columbus. This time a solo shot to deep center for his 10th long ball of the season.
And I just Saturday, like the emphasis. He did it again! Like that you did that.
Well, that's how it's typed out.
No, I'm not making fun of you. I felt like you were kind of borderline mocking the way it was done, and that makes me happy.
Saturday, they tweeted out that Gabriel Arias stays hot with a solo home run in the third inning of Columbus tonight. The home run was Arias's 11th on the season and third in his last three games.
Yeah, he obviously had kind of a year to forget so far and just couldn't find it, had the injury and just scuffling. And then now it's like a light switch. He is popping off. But you want to talk about popping off? This next one you're going to read. I didn't even know who this dude was prior. So I'm sorry again. We spend our time on the major league level and just lightly prospects. That's not our lane. Check out Guardians Baseball Insider with Guardians of the Future for that. They're experts. But this, I'm going to remember this guy's name now. This is wild.
So Saturday, Guardians Perspective tweeted out that this is getting ridiculous. Guardians 22-year-old outfield prospect Jonathan Rodriguez just hit another home run for Lake County. A two-run shot in the third inning against Fort Wayne for Rodriguez. The home run was his 20th of the season. He now has 18 home runs in his last 39 games. Golly. Wow.
Yeah, that is a lot of home runs. That is a streak.
Jesus Christ.
In a month and a half hitting 18 home runs. Yeah. That's wild.
I know you told me it's not Beebe. Is what? How do you pronounce it again?
It's Beebe.
Beebe, that's what I thought.
Like, bye, bitch.
Saturday, Guardians Perspective tweeted out that 23-year-old right-handed pitching prospect Tanner Beebe lowers his ERA to 1.43 with AA Akron through his first 7 starts since his promotion. The line is 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, wasn't earned, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, 94 pitches, 63 of them were for strikes. With Akron on the year, 37 2/3, 27 hits, 7 runs, 6 of them were earned, 5 walks, 38 strikeouts, 1.43 ERA.
Which is real good. He's going to be special.
Yeah. And the last thing for news is Sunday, which we already talked about, the promotion of Jonathan Rodriguez to AA.
And no, we didn't. Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't put it in order, like underneath the.
No, no, no. I'm saying we talked about it when we talked about him. I didn't read this off, but.
Oh, you mentioned it? I'm sorry, I missed it when you said it.
You mentioned it, saying that he was starting in the game today.
That's Xavion Curry, bud. This is the guy that just hit the 18 home runs. Oh,
Jonathan Rodriguez.
Yeah, I fucked it up.
I'm all flustered.
Then yesterday he got promoted.
Yeah. That he got promoted to double A. Let me just start this. Back from the top. Cleveland Guardians are promoting 22-year-old outfield prospect Jonathan Rodriguez to AA Akron. Rodriguez hit his 21st home run of the season today for Lake County. Rodriguez, over the last 40 games, 57 and 160, 37 runs, 11 doubles, 19 home runs, 45 RBIs, 11 walks, a stolen base, and a 356 average.
Yeah, like I said, popping off. So he got promoted, and he deserves it. So wrapping up, upcoming series preview, four games versus the Tigers. First one was this afternoon. We won. Whoops, spoiler, sorry. Guardians taking over the world. 4-1. Yep. Andrés Giménez legacy at bat. Kid's got fucking ice in his veins. Game two is starting literally like right now. Xavion Curry debut, absolute chills. And then tomorrow is going to be, if this thing loads, I'm so sorry. Ugh, so unprofessional. Tomorrow's a 7:10 start. It's going to be Plesac versus Hill. And then Wednesday's another 7:10 start. It's going to be Big Daddy Dick Quantrill versus Daniel Norris. And then Friday, going to be at that game with Quincy and my brother. So I'll tweet about it, but I'm going to get there like 6 for the pregame in the district and all that. So if anybody's there, slide into the DMs and so we can meet up if anybody gives a shit. If not, I understand I'm pretty much a loser, but would love to meet anybody if you're going to be at that game. No pitchers announced for that. Saturday's a 6:10 and Sunday's a 12:05 start on Peacock, which means everyone's going to lose their minds. But I pay $5 a month for Peacock, so flex, sorry, can't relate. Tigers come in, I don't even care. They're like 31 games under 500 now, and they've lost 8 in a row thanks to us. So actually, I do know their record. We took game one, and listen, 3 out of 4 here. Like, I mean, baseball's baseball, but like, you got to keep pressing the pedal down. You're hot. You're playing a trash team. You need to take advantage like we've been doing. And one thing I'll say really fast is it has been very refreshing, and I was super refreshed last week that we swept them because we needed to do that. And while we've played well all year, it feels like, just anecdotally, it feels like we haven't always, most of the time, done what we're supposed to. Like the ones you peg. And
this whole year, what we've done is we've beat teams we shouldn't, and we haven't beaten teams we should.
Which is not usually how we go. So to do what you set out, like at least get 3 out of 4, but then when we took we took 3 last week, it was refreshing. It was like, thank you. This is what we're supposed to do. Just keep your foot on their throat. Like, and then if you lose, God forbid, say we go 1-2 this weekend, that's fine because you took, 3 of 4 already.
Yeah.
Like, just beat the teams you're supposed to. And as far as the White Sox, I mean, Tony La Russa is asleep at the wheel with a drink in his hand. What else is new? Tim Anderson's out till the end of the season, or damn near, like with a week or two to go. He sprained his finger or something. And
it was he sprained his wrist.
I thought it was a finger. I am 99% sure.
I will put a whole paycheck on it.
Okay, gotcha. But yeah, he's out to the 20. Sprained
his wrist sliding into second base.
I thought it was like a tear or something in his finger, but yeah, that makes sense. But either way, he's out and they just can never get it going. They're just like painfully average. It's so painful, but in the best way for us. So
that's what happens when you have shit defense.
We play true. And I ragged on them all last year. Remember, I just kept saying Southside frauds, you're not going to get anywhere. And they got like 3-1 by the Astros in round one. But yeah, we're playing them on our home turf. We've always, regardless of what year, we just seem to play them well. It's usually the Twins that give us heartburn. So 2 out of 3 is not out of the realm of possibility. Just don't get swept. But the way we're playing, let's take 2 out of 3 and get this thing done. So a fun time to be a Guardians fan. Again, I've crossed the bridge. I'm ready to be hurt. We're winning this division. I refuse to accept anything else. And if that bites me in the butt later on, don't really care because this is a lot of fun and this team looks like they could win it. So thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, follow, turn on automatic downloads wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Please consider leaving a review. It really helps us out. Lets us know you're enjoying the content. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at 216 Baseball Pod. Make sure you check out the merch shop. Links in the episode description. I've also linked our new website that Paul designed, which is Straight Fire. Check that out. That'll get you to all of our socials and to the merch shop. So you can
get
that.
You to the socials, merch shop, the new Patreon,
the Discord's server. There. We're not tweeting about it yet. So slide in, show us you listened to the episode and just say hi. I think we still have notifications on. I haven't turned them all the way off, so I'm going to regret that soon, I think, when it starts getting used. But but join the Patreon.
I'm about to be on the Discord. I think we should tweet out about the Discord now.
I got you. That's behind the scenes business. I got you. We'll get some people in there.
In for this new one. I look forward to seeing you guys in there. It's going to be some fun. Got some stickers. Going to be getting out some premium stuff in there, but looking forward to
yeah, so hop in. We'll be back next Monday, give you a breakdown of the Tigers and White Sox series, which should hopefully be a good one as we keep rolling. Let's go. Guards up, baby. First place. Guards up,
baby. Let's go.